of Israel, Occupation 101, Occupation of the American Mind, Peace Propaganda in the Promised Land, Roadmap to Apartheid, 1948 Catastrophe, the great work of the marvelous, marvelous Edward Said, the myth of the clash of civilizations. Gold package. Silver package, Free Free Palestine, when you call. The work on Zionism, settler colonialism, and the case for a democratic state. The book by Jeff Halper. And the work, the audiobook by Rashid Khalidi on the 100-year war against Palestine. Wow! $75, a university education. Indeed, more than a university education. Ah, the Library of Alexandria, a history, 100-year history. Thank you for your commitment to yourself, your community, for equal rights and justice. And I am Mimi Rosenberg, and you're listening to an Equal Rights and Justice special to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people for another world is possible. And with the theoretical tools and persistent organizing and institution building, together we can bring it about and for a free, free Palestine.
WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web. Covert Action Bulletin with Chris Garoppa and Rachel Hu is usually on in this time. You heard a special presentation this morning at 9 a.m. It's just about 10:02. Please stay tuned for Ecologic with Sally Gellert, Donna Stein, and Ken Gale.
Put up a parking lot with a pink hotel, a boutique, and a swinging hot spot. Don't it always seem to go that you don't know what you've got till it's gone? It paid paradise, put up a parking lot.
If they keep on following
see a windmill go, feel the pull of an ocean wave, the heat from a volcano. There's so much we could do, there's so much we could know, if we listen to the earth.
Welcome. Glad you can join us for Ecologic. Clean air and water are healthy air and water. Every day is Earth Day. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. This is Ecologic for Wednesday, January 31st, 2024.
When your air or water are clean, thank an environmentalist. If not, become one. Enough said.
Our guests today are Mary Olson from the Gender and Radiation Impact Project and Leona Morgan from Hall No. But first, we'll talk about an environmental activist victory at New Jersey Transit, the harms of incineration, and a pending law to cut packaging waste in New York State.
We like to start our show with good news. New Jersey activists won a great victory this week when New Jersey Transit announced that it is canceling the New Jersey Transit Grid Project, a backup gas-fired power plant funded by federal storm resiliency money and proposed to be located in the environmental justice community of Kearney. Empower New Jersey, a coalition that includes Don't Gas the Meadowlands, Food and Water Watch, and many other groups, has been calling on the agency to focus on solar energy in their design, and commissioned a study to demonstrate the practicality. Instead, they're using the money for other resiliency projects. For more information, we have a link on our website with comments from the environmental and environmental justice groups involved in the victory.
A lot of the plastic pollution in our landfills and in the ocean is from packaging. Europe is ahead of the U.S. in reducing plastic packaging, but there was a bill in the New York State Senate Assembly and Senate called the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act that will require companies selling, offering for sale, or distributing packaging materials and products to register with a packaging reduction organization to develop a packaging reduction and recycling plan. The bill was introduced nearly a year ago and needs a constituent input to get it moving along. The bill numbers are A5322-A in the New York Assembly and S4246-A in the State Senate. That's A5322-A and S4246-A. You can find the contact info for your reps on New York, on www.nysenate.gov and www.nyassembly.gov. These bills already have a lot of sponsors, but it's not yet a veto-proof majority, and New York's governor doesn't always favor environmental bills. She often changes them drastically or vetoes them, as she did with the bill to prevent tropical deforestation on New York State purchases.
Sometimes it gets tiring to always have to be diligent about greenwashing attempts.
Yeah.
As society finally catches up to what environmentalists and Ecologic have been saying for years, the world needs to find a way to tackle waste, both personal and commercial, and it can't be incineration. For years, it was assumed that burning trash into ash made it go away, but that is far from reality. Burning trash unleashes deadly toxins into the environment. Waste does not just disappear when burned. And on a societal level, guess where incinerators are most often found? In low-income and people of color communities, where people don't have the political clout to stop the facilities nor the finances to move away from the direct effects of the pollution. You will hear more about the harmful effects of incineration and the importance of adopting alternative solutions in an upcoming episode of Ecologic.
And here is Creative Native's live cover of the New Zealand reggae band Herb's song, Nuclear Waste.
Unmute. Okay, so
that was Nuclear Waste by Herbs, covered by Creative Natives. Now we welcome our guests. Please introduce yourselves. Mary?
Good morning. My name is Mary Olson. I'm with Gender and Radiation Impact Project, which I founded in 2017. And I'm thrilled to join you this morning from the mountains of North Carolina.
Leona?
Hi, good morning, everyone. I'm joining from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And you are?
Thanks. So just to be very clear, I am working with a group called Hall No, and so I want to talk about uranium mining at the Grand Canyon today. Thanks.
So the Grand Canyon, I mean, that's almost like a sacred site in U.S. history. Why are they doing that?
Well, that's what I want to know. I mean, why would anyone want to mine uranium at the Grand Canyon? It goes back. Basically, I go all the way back to the doctrine of discovery and how our country is founded on, you know, the tenets of capitalism and land ownership and things like that. And so taking our uranium, this was one way to steal land through what's called the 1872 mining law to, you know, for manifest destiny and things like that. So a lot of tools of colonization, people may not realize, you know, the Transcontinental Railroad, the grid, different things that are still used today that really make it hard to get our land back. So going back to the theft of our land, Grand Canyon has a lot of different indigenous peoples there. The Havasupai have been fighting this one mine for decades, since the 80s. There's actually thousands of uranium claims around the Grand Canyon, claims created, like I said, probably going all the way back to 1872. And these claims, they're just deposits of uranium underground. They're not developed, but they're identified and located so people know, oh yeah, I own uranium in the ground. So there was thousands of them. In 2012, Obama did a protection around the Grand Canyon to prevent mining in those claims. So they did a 20-year mineral withdrawal, which stopped it, but there was 11 that were grandfathered in. And then last year, Biden made a national monument, almost 1 million acres, to protect the Grand Canyon from uranium mining forever. But again, those 11 were grandfathered in. So about half of those are already done mining because they finished their mining a long time ago. Now we're dealing with probably 3 that could start. And one did start on January 8th, which is what I'm dealing with today, is called the Pinon Plain uranium mine. So we got a team of people, Hall No, watching the mine, organizing, educating folks. And then there's a bunch of other people involved. But really what happened here is, I call it a perfect storm. So we had the price of uranium hit over $100 a pound. We had Biden at COP pushing for tripling nuclear energy by 2050. And then this Nuclear Fuel Security Act that got passed with the National Defense Authorization Act last month, or almost 2 months ago. It's the end of January, so it's still last month. But all these things were happening at the same time that this mine we've been watching for years just finished its construction. And it was just, it had some problems in the past. It could have started. Apparently, Fukushima had really delayed it because the price of uranium went down. And so some of these nuclear disasters like Chernobyl and Fukushima, they actually stopped a lot of other nuclear projects.
Yeah.
So right now, you know, we're, nobody.
Work and you're finding disaster. Something good about something terrible.
Yeah, so I'll just stop there. But yeah, something good about something terrible. We got this national monument, protects 1 million acres forever, but we got a mine that just started. And part of that, I believe the company was retaliating against Biden. I mean, the company put out a big statement like, wow. Oh, we can't. We're so this is happening after the monument was signed. They said, we're going to start tomorrow kind of thing. They didn't. That was in August, but they didn't start till January. So here we are. Navajo Nation is in between the mine and the mill. The mill is in southeast Utah. So for your listeners, the Grand Canyon is in Arizona. And the mill is in a place we call the Four Corners, where Arizona, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico meet. And it's very close to that Four Corners area. And that's where the Navajo Nation is. So the uranium would be transported through our nation to the mill and then through many nations, Hopi, Ute, Paiute, all these different indigenous peoples who have lived here, you know, since time immemorial. And Navajo Nation has a law against uranium mining and uranium transport. However, these are U.S. highways. I mean, the Grand Canyon is way off the nation, but still the transport goes through our lands. And this is the biggest concern because we got probably 12 trucks a day carrying 30 tons of uranium covered only with tarps. So this is what we're dealing with. And we're really trying to stop to shut down the mine. I mean, the mine already started, but we're still trying to shut it down before any transport starts.
So Mary Olson, what's so bad about this?
Well, I want to be very clear. The only reason uranium is being taken out of the ground is to make nuclear weapons or to power nuclear power reactors that provide electricity. But that electricity ends up being a crime against humanity. We have other ways to make electricity. Yeah. Coal, it turns out, is also a crime against humanity. We know these dirty energies are not the answer, but nuclear is not clean for the people around the Grand Canyon, around the mill site, Navajo Nation, any of the places that Leona is telling us about. It is not clean, but it's also not clean at the reactors. And I just want to share that our federal government in quite a while ago, in 2001, disclosed that making the fuel for a reactor to operate for 20 years does, in fact, kill people who are involved in that uranium mining and that uranium processing that Leona is talking about. They always say that nuclear energy is clean, it's safe, it doesn't kill anybody. But in this environmental impact statement on extending operations at nuclear power reactors, they admitted that there were going to be people who died of cancer. That's the only death they're talking about is cancer. And there's other things that uranium does to people besides cancer that can be fatal. But they admitted cancers, and when you do the math on how many reactors were going to be operating and how many reactors had already operated, you get into the range of close to 4,000 people they were admitting to dying from bringing uranium out of the ground and processing it and then using it in nuclear power. The thing is they're only talking about a reference man, an adult, young adult male. So when you add the children and you add the difference between males and females, which my work has focused on, then you get up to pretty amazing numbers of horror. These are horror numbers of 24,000 people that our federal government is hiding behind saying, oh yeah, okay, 12 people die per 20 years of reactor operation. So I just stepped through the math without reporting it, give you the total of when you include people of both sexes and all ages. Our federal government is saying we're going to power the reactors and we know we're going to kill 24,000 people. And that's just their calculations, what they admit into their equations. And there is so much greater of an impact. So I want people to get that this is a crime against humanity, truly.
Okay, you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Ken Gale.
WBAI needs you. Our buddies keep us on the air, and it's easy. Just a few moments of your time, right now. lets us know that you care about the environmental news, information, and entertainment that Ecologic brings you each week.
If you want, you can send a check or money order for your membership and or premiums. Mail to WBAI Radio, Attention Membership, 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, 11217.
And let's back to our guests today, Mary Olson from the Gender and Radiation Impact Project and Leona Morgan from Paul No. You've painted some pretty scary pictures. What would you like listeners to do? Mary, we'll start with you.
I want listeners to listen to Leona. And I'll stop in just a moment and give the microphone back to her, because these are our responsibility as people living in the dominant society to find new solutions and new ways to support the people who have been not only exploited, but targeted for destructive technologies that have cost them their lives. So we need to support those communities. And more than that, in addition, not more, but in addition, we need to support technologies that are truly clean, that don't result in radioactive exposure of people. Leona.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. There's a lot of stuff happening out here. So I'm talking about one uranium mine that just started. They're stockpiling ore on site. They haven't started transport. And as I understand, this is a small deposit. They only plan to mine for 28 months. But my perspective is this is going to be kind of like a pinprick that if they are allowed to mine, we could possibly see this wave of another uranium boom. Back in the 50s to the 70s, there was a lot of uranium mining that happened unregulated, leaving thousands, we're estimating, I'm saying between 15 and 20,000 abandoned uranium mines. There's a really cool interactive map online that Stanford University put out, and it shows where these mines are. You can zoom in, and then a lot of them are clustered together. There's a community, and if you go to our website, our website is haulno.com, haulno.com. Because when we're asking people if they want uranium through their communities, you know, we say haul no, but we, you know, we actually say something else. But this website has all the information, folks. Well, I need to update it, and we have a lot of new information that's not up. It has the map, it has the timeline, and some of the community opposition against this. Right now, I'm just talking about transport, but the past mining that occurred. There's a lot of mines around the communities on the haul route that are also abandoned. So when I say 20,000 abandoned uranium mines across the country, these are mines that have no budget to clean up. The U.S. government puts no money into cleaning up its mess. So when Mary's talking about how it's admitting it's killing people, well, there's a second thing that it's not paying for, and it's not paying for the people it killed. In December, the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act was also attached to that NDAA, and that was taken off. So the RECA, Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, what it does is give compensation to some uranium workers and some people impacted from bomb testing. What this amendment would have done was expand it to include the Trinity downwinders, the people in New Mexico who suffered the first bomb test, and then more uranium workers, the ones that started working after 1971. So uranium workers, DOE workers after 1971 are not compensated. And so now this compensation, it was set to sunset just a couple years ago, and they put a little two-year extension, just a two-year Band-Aid. And that ends in this summer 2024, June or July. So this is a fund of money to help to alleviate people who are suffering right now, dying of horrible illnesses because of what the United States government did to them through its mining. And they stopped paying for that. Yet they're putting in trillions into new weapons, billions into new energy development. The decommissioning fund alone, it's like a piggy bank for these nuclear companies. So we need to tell the government, stop making new waste. Last year, we stopped Holtec in New Mexico. The year before that, we stopped ISP in Texas. What I'm trying to say is we stopped the development of waste facilities for the waste from nuclear power plants. We have nowhere to put it. And so right now, there's a waste problem at all levels of the nuclear fuel chain that need to be cleaned up because our people have contaminated water. There's uranium coming out of the urine of newborn babies, and now they're trying to do more.
Wait, you say the victory that we were talking about this summer, they quietly defunded that?
Well, we in New Mexico, so just to kind of for your listeners, you know, just to relate it to something in New York, you know, Indian Point, all these power plants in the country have waste, I believe over 80,000 metric tons in the country with nowhere to go. And so that waste was slated to come to the Southwest.
Oh,
and
so, no. Yeah, I know the consolidated interim storage is a bad move, but the RECA money that we were celebrating in the summer.
The RECA money, they did a 2-year extension, and that's almost over. So if Congress doesn't pass something to expand or extend it, it's dead, completely 100% gone this summer.
Wow.
Yeah, we were celebrating that the Senate voted on RECA, but that was only half, and it never got voted on by the House.
Okay, what does RECA stand for?
RECA is the Radiation Exposure Compensation Act, and this is a fund of money that the U.S. government, if you look it up, it lists all of the illnesses that they compensate for. So it's well recognized. There, the uranium mining and other defense jobs cause illnesses. But then again, how can we fully believe this if they're just using reference man?
All right.
Yeah, and I want to make a reference to the poverty on the reservation. A friend of mine from Gallup, which New Mexico, which is in the Four Corners area, said that the boys she went to high school with, a lot of them were looking forward to becoming uranium miners because even though they know they're going to die in their 40s, they didn't care because they look around the res and they go, life sucks here. What do I want to be in my 60s or 70s for? And that brought home the poverty of the reservation and the health of uranium mining in a way I had never heard it told to me before.
Thanks, Ken. I think that can apply to anyone today when we look at the economy. I mean, that's any nuclear worker, any worker that has to take a job that they don't want or that they know is going to kill them. I do believe our workers out there are, I mean, today the industry and the government make excuses like, oh, it's not like the old days. Today we have new technology and better protections is what they always say to us. But it's the same stuff. It's the same stuff that killed our relatives in the past. And it's the same stuff that's going to keep killing people today. So what people want out there are jobs, definitely. And Mary was talking about coal mining earlier. Our nation, the Navajo Nation, was founded to sign oil and gas leases. It wasn't for our sovereignty. It wasn't, you know, so for our human rights or us to exist as an indigenous people side by side and, you know, working together with the United States. It was to extract our natural resources. Yes. And so we feel a lot of the young people in this generation, we just call ourselves a resource colony because of the oil and gas, coal mining, uranium mining. And then now we're dealing with a wave of hydrogen, helium, and these other new so-called new energies that need these different types of minerals. So like we've seen in Africa with cobalt and these children mining with their hands, it's kind of the same story, just a different mineral. You can say it's clean and it's safer, but our monitors, when we're watching the mine, you know, the mine workers don't have respiratory equipment. Granted, they're all older than reference man, but you know, this is something, even though there's information out there, I think it's really hard for, especially in Arizona and places when they get hot, to keep their masks on all day and stuff like that. And so I know for myself personally, I go to the mine, I always mask up, you know, we take pictures. But if you're there constantly, as a worker, that's one thing. What I'm trying to get across is there's people that live in these contaminated places across the country, 20,000 of them living in low-level radioactive places all the time. So there are health impacts from living by abandoned uranium mines. And so now some of the things people are worried about is, will the mine be properly cleaned up? Is there insurance for accidents? Who are the first responders? If it's through Navajo, but it's U.S. highways, who's going to clean? Who's going to come? You know, so there's a lot of questions unanswered and a lot of problems that are basically history repeating itself. So it doesn't matter how new the technology is, how different things they say they are today. If a spill happens, as we've seen in the past, being people of color and indigenous in the United States, the colonial structure is not going to, it's not going to take care of us and make sure we have things like RECA or cleanup for abandoned uranium mines. If a spill happens, you know, that if a truck turns over, that's the worst thing that could happen. But right now, we know we're not going to get the protections. We know we're not going to have the proper cleanup. And this is why it's imperative to not allow these things to begin with. I'm talking about Grand Canyon, but there's uranium mining in the Black Hills and other parts of the country that also need to stop because it contaminates water and it's killing people.
And there's uranium in the Catskills of New York State. And it's right near the reservoirs that supply water to New York City and Westchester County. And we got a ban passed. I was part of the Uranium Mining Coalition in the early 80s. We got a ban passed in 1982. That ban has since expired. So if they want to mine uranium near the water supply of New York City and Westchester County, and in parts of New Jersey, they're now legally allowed to do that. So if anyone is thinking that, this is happening way out there, it could very easily happen way out here. For those of you in the peace movement, every time you stop the development of another nuclear weapon, as if we need another nuclear weapon, you are lowering the price of uranium and making it a little bit healthier for Leona and her people. When we shut down a nuclear power plant and we keep one from opening, we're, again, helping the health of the water of the Navajo Nation. Everything is connected. So things we do anywhere in this country are affecting things that people in other parts of the country are also doing.
Which is why we say this is part of our Connect the Dots series.
I want to get in a little word about that song we heard at the beginning about nuclear waste coming down. I was part of a team that reinitiated a look at the fallout from nuclear weapons testing. And a moment ago, we were imagining what have been our victories. I just want to mention that still, even with the current developments, the strongest and most impactful nuclear accord to date is the 1963 Partial Test Ban Treaty, which was won primarily by women and children who stepped forward and proved that strontium-90 was in baby teeth. And it's not that the strontium was going to hurt the teeth. It just proved that the nuclear waste from exploding nuclear bombs in New Mexico, the first one, and then 92 more in Nevada at the Nevada test site, mm-hmm. had rained down, literally falling down on us, this nuclear waste, and gotten into our bodies. And that proof was enough to get the attention of the lawmakers in not only Washington, D.C., but worldwide. And about a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis, we actually had Kennedy and Khrushchev, the first two signers of the partial test ban treaty, sorry. But the one that put tests underground. Now, testing underground was not a perfect thing, but it reduced the exposures. And I just read a thing this morning that people are being diagnosed with cancer, not childhood cancer, but lifelong risk of cancer at a younger age, like 10 and 15 years younger than before. And these are people who were born in 1950 and after, which means that they were impacted by the fallout. So mm-hmm. I'm not asserting that the fallout is the only thing contributing to cancer onset being younger, but it certainly aligns with it. And this work was primarily led by Sebastian Philippe at Princeton, and the maps are just astounding. Really the basis for comprehensive socialized medicine in the United States, if we get real about what that impact looks like.
And before we take
Southwestern
phone calls,
sorry,
I wanted to ask Leona how much you've been able to measure the residue from uranium mines and mills in the water supply of the Navajo Nation.
Oh, I don't do. I'm not a scientist, Ken, but we.
Yeah, but you have information.
We started the radiation monitoring project. This was a citizens' project to get Geiger counters into the hands mm-hmm. of affected communities, and we trained on how to use them and the health effects. So we have taken some Geiger readings in some places. Me personally, yeah, I don't have the stats in my head, but there was a big spill in 1979 called the Church Rock spill, and right. that was not really fully tested. Today, there's a downstream community. Well, in 2015, there was a community getting 40, almost 60, I think it was 59 parts per billion uranium in their tap water. So the legal limit is 30. So it was very close to double. It was very high, and the community found out about this through a letter that said, don't drink the water. Adults maybe drink a maximum of 1 liter. Don't use it for baby formula. Don't let the kids drink it. Yeah. So they turned off all the water at all the schools. And then the next day, the Gold King mine spill happened. So a lot of the attention shifted away from that uranium problem to this new mining problem. Well, a new old problem. So the testing in that community, we say that's from the Church Rock spill when all that stuff came down and came mm-hmm. through the wash. Of course, the government says, no, that's naturally occurring. And so to make sure to test where is the water being pumped from, some independent scientists did that. So they're still trying to prove that was from the Church Rock spill. So it's really hard to get levels unless you have already been testing, you already have background baseline. And then when something happens, where you take the tests, how often you sample, that's just not happening. I mean, the Rio Grande gets sampled, I think, once every 10 years, just because we don't have enough people in New Mexico to do it.
Mary, what does your data show?
And you have more information, Mary, on the water in New York. Can you give us a little bit more update on that?
Yeah, I am sorry that I don't have in front of me numbers that I can cite for contamination in drinking water in the Southwest, but it's absolutely true that uranium has been detected in newborn infants, and there's a whole study called the Navajo Uranium Birth Cohort that is tracking this primarily from the point of view of heavy metals, because uranium is a heavy metal, and the heavy metal aspects of it are toxic rather than of the radiation. There is radiation from uranium. Unfortunately, the toxic aspects will kill an infant or a child quicker than the amount of time it takes for the radiation to produce cancer. So it's both toxic and radioactive. It's in children. When adults are exposed, adults are 5 to 10 times more resistant than children. And so a man compared to a boy is times 5, compared to a girl is times 10. So what does that tell us? Girls are disproportionately harmed by radiation. This is something that we learned from the A-bomb survivors and the National Academy of Science printing a report called The Biological Effects of Ionizing Radiation in 2006. So it really put everybody on their ear that maybe radiation wasn't a uniform phenomena. Maybe it matters what your sex is, what your age is when you're exposed. So we now know that radiation is something that we have to talk in terms of reproduction, in terms of children, in terms of the impacts, and we don't yet have protections that are based on that. So we have regulatory agencies all over the United States, but we're looking now in the East Coast where reactors are closing, they're taking them apart, and they're having to dump a lot of radioactivity because they don't know what else to do with the liquid, particularly from the fuel pools. And this is water that has become so highly radioactive that it's not radioactivity in the water. The water itself is radioactive. Mm-hmm. And that water can pass in, if it gets into the body, this is radioactive hydrogen that's part of the water molecule. It can pass across the placental barrier into the developing fetus. It can cross the blood brain barrier, where very little material is allowed to get into our central nervous system, but this radioactive water can easily pass because chemically it's identical to regular water. And this is why we should not be putting anything like this into our environment, because it not only affects human beings, it affects every living thing that has water. And that's pretty much every living thing.
That means so, you're jumping in the
right now, I'm sorry to say, we are at our next station ID break, and you're listening to Ecologic, WBAI's premier environmental show, right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. I'm Donna Stein.
I'm Ken Gale.
And I'm Sally Gellert.
When you choose to become our Ecologic BAI buddy, you are giving us a reliable source of support that we can depend on, just as you can depend on BAI. We're here for you all the time, and you'll be helping to ensure we stay here. Just $5 or $10 a month, more if you can, enables people to listen wherever they are in our listening area and beyond, thanks to the internet, from people driving on 985 to a nurse in Denmark, to people away from home who want to hear a familiar voice.
WBAI needs to reliably know that the bills will get paid. The best way to do that is to get more BAI Buddy pledges. But any donation, anytime, helps us in a big way. Remember, tell them that you're donating in the name of Ecologic. Just go to give2wbai.org and put eco-logic in the search box to choose from our premiums, or call 212-209-2950 to make your donation today.
Now we're going to take one or two calls from Mary and Leona at 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. For your calls from Mary and Leona. While we're waiting, we have news about two upcoming events. On Thursday, February 1st at 6:30 p.m., a conversation on flooding in Southeast Queens at Goldie Maple Academy in Orveen, New York. For information, call 718-523-3069. On February 13th at 1 p.m., the Board of Ocean Energy Management, BOEM, is holding a virtual hearing on offshore wind in New Jersey. There is a link on Ecologic's website, ecoradio.org.
Leona, you wanted to ask Mary something?
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everyone. I know we're getting close to the end of the hour, and for myself, Hall, we always say we have a two-pronged approach. A policy side and an action side. And right now, we're really heavily focused on the policy side, getting statements from the president of the Navajo Nation, the governor of Arizona, maybe Deb Haaland, some other folks we're trying to get support from. And I was listening to your story, Mary, because on the action side, people are talking about actually stopping those trucks. And so, again, those trucks are going to be carrying unprocessed uranium ore, covered only with tarps. The company says the tarps are bolted down, so they're not going to spill any dust, is what they're telling us. But I remember my first protest, the very first protest I organized was put together by by eighth graders. And the only people that came were women and children. And we did this march in Crown Point, New Mexico, and we walked to the ISL mine. There was no men. I think, you know, because they're either workers or they want jobs. We were talking about that earlier. So the women and children were the only people protesting. The NRC came that day and there was a group of about 20 Navajo women and children. So one was pregnant and carrying a baby. And those NRC people were so scared of us. They flew out of there as fast as they could, you know, leaving, kicking up the dust. So I'm asking you, if we're going to have protests alongside the road, and the people that care the most are usually mothers, women, and then the young people are very excited to do stuff. And there are men. We got a lot of men doing the monitoring, actually going to the mine, climbing trees, taking pictures. But when we have trucks moving on the road and they're saying there's no dust that's going to come out, what do you think? How safe do you think it is if people are trying to protest on the side of the road?
Wow.
I think people should take precaution, and let me be specific about that. I didn't like having a global pandemic, but it did make things like N95 masks made by Honeywell, which I'm endorsing right here and right now, and they're relatively affordable, and you can order them, and you should, because the biggest threat immediately is going to be inhaling particles. And my friend Ian Fairley reminds us that it takes one cell to make a baby and one cell to make a cancer. It does not involve how many cells in your body are exposed. It involves the probability that a single cell exposed is going to hang around and be abnormal and survive long enough for cancer to come out of it. So a tiny exposure on one day can be the end of your life in 20 years. So you want to be sure that people go ahead and wear masks, and they can put messages on their masks. That's great. The second thing is to wear shoes that do not go back in the house. You can keep them as your protest shoes and keep rewearing them, but do not wear them back in the house. Get people to make donations so that children and women can afford special protest shoes. And take a shower after each time you do this, just as a ritual of affirming your health and your safety, so that you again are not conveying these particles in a way that build up in your home. You want to keep your home as unfull of these ideas of death and these actual particles of death as possible. You want your home to be safe and healthy. So these steps are as much about preserving that as any real concern about the particle on your hair. It's the particle you breathe in that is the big one.
Thank you, Mary. I think we have callers. We have several callers, and we're not going to have time for everybody, unfortunately. Caller, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to know if you're aware of or anything is being done about the fake turf showing up in public places, like the carcinogenic turf that was on football fields.
We only have a short amount of time. We need to keep these questions for Leona and Mary
will talk about that on a future show.
Yeah.
All right. Next caller. We have time for, I guess, one more.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Hi. Am I on the air?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to say a point of information. And first of all, thank you for the whole show. It's great. It's informative. It's proactive. About the nuclear test, the partial nuclear test ban treaty, I'm sure it's true that the women and children came forward with their evidence of the strontium 90 in their teeth. But the organization who did the study is Physicians for Social Responsibility, and they've been very active, and they're active again. They're part of a whole international Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War. But it's very important that it was the physicians who collected that information that proved that strontium 90 was getting in babies' teeth all over the country. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have time for the third caller. Let's go for it.
Hi, good morning. This is Angel. Wonderful, informative show. But my question had to do with, are you being asked to also provide, the $64 million question is where to put all this waste? Mm-hmm. But people think that you go to Utah, et cetera, that people don't live there, there's no one there. Where can we dispose of all this, all these you know, whether it's the liquid from the waste or uranium deposits, et cetera. Thank you. I'll listen off air.
Well, I think that's the million-dollar question. I'm just going to answer on the, in terms of uranium. Right now, the United States government is trying to clean up uranium on the Navajo Nation. And so this is one type of radioactive waste. Of course, you're probably talking about the waste from the power plants. But with uranium waste, the Navajos are Diné people. We're saying, take it off the res, take it away. And so literally, there's a community like it right next to the res. They're planning to build a new radioactive waste dump there to bring the uranium waste there. And so the community that's getting the cleanup, they're so happy that they're finally seeing cleanup before they die. This is imperative for them that the government is going to do something for their people. But what does it mean for the other community that the dump is going to be located and all the surrounding people that also want their uranium cleaned up? They all want, think, you know, they're going to get cleaned up. And this one community where the new dump is being proposed is against it. It doesn't have uranium to begin with. So it doesn't have the same kind of contamination. So nationally, this is the same.
We're going over time. And you know, it's an impossible question to answer in 20 or 30 seconds.
Or an hour.
I'll give it 10. Stop making it because we don't know what to do with it.
Exactly.
You've got to stop the flood before you can deal with the puddle.
And that's the government
is. That's a great last line, and time does fly. And we thank everybody for joining us. Ecologic and EcoRadio with EcoRadio's website. EcoRadio.org is our website, has information on a wide variety of environmental issues, and you can find links to our previous shows as well. Look over the site, and if there is a show or news item for which you'd like a follow-up or a news report, there is a clickable link near the top of the page, just under the promo me, to email us, and please go to give to WBAI.org to become a BAI buddy or choose a premium.
Join us in 2 weeks on Wednesday, February 14th, 10 a.m., for the Dangers of Incineration. We love to stay in touch with you, so those of you online, please sign up for our email list while you're checking out ecoradio.org. Those of you on Facebook, we're at WBAI Ecologic, no dashes.
There are lots of ways to get involved at WBAI. Check the meeting section of our WBAI.org homepage for dates and times. And, of course, we always need your donations. We need your contributions to support everything that makes the broadcast happen. The engineers, electricity, equipment upkeep, rent. Check out our premium, The River That Harms. Pledging as a BAI buddy now during this show really helps Ecologic especially.
We are always glad to have you with us for Ecologic, live or on the archives. The show will be on the WBAI archives in just 5 or 10 minutes.
Our thanks to our engineer, Michael G. Haskins. We couldn't do this without you. I'm Ken Gale.
I'm Sally Gellert.
And I'm Donna Stein. Join us on Wednesday, February 14th at 10 a.m. for the Dangers of Incineration. That's in 2 weeks. We're usually here Wednesdays at 10 a.m. between Covert Action Bulletin and Living for the City. Check our website for details. Thanks for being our listeners.
How bright it shines on the nations of the earth. All who share this thing called life celebrate each day's rebirth.
So solar power, inexpensive energy. So
99.5 FM, WBAI, New York.
Well, Mark, time to watch the frogs eating the flies.
Yep, then off to the neighbors to watch the paint dry.
Mr. Wilson, the trains are coming. The trains are coming.
Land sakes. It's the Arts Express pulling into the station with goodies for all of us.
Well, it's about time. Looky, there's presents for everyone.
Look, Pa, it's a preview of the latest indie feature.
And more, it's an interview with a major Broadway theater actor.
And I got some shiny new film reviews from film festivals all over the world.
And here's cutting-edge poetry from the country's most progressive poet.
Oh, sweet Lord, it's a miracle.
No, it's not. It's Arts Express with host Prairie Miller.
That's Arts Express with host Prairie Miller at our new day and time, Wednesdays at 9 p.m. on WBAI New York.
Time passed. Many romantic feelings were associated with radio broadcasting, as with aviation, with motoring across the far western United States.
50 years ago, a young genius made a classic that could never be retold. Now it must be told again.
This is Peter Bergman on All Mixed Up.
And I am all mixed up, but not so confused, not so habitually bewildered that I don't listen to WBAI when I come to town to Gotham. I love New York and I love BAI.
You're tuned to Hi-Fi.
Establishment media sucks. All gaslighting, so good luck. Bullshit we can't afford. Why he's fomenting this? Watch and see as his jack off the medium speeds and jumps the medium and hits him head on. The Jimmy Dore Show.
Guess what? They're adding another night of Jimmy Dore on WBAI. That's the point here. You turn in Wednesdays and Thursdays at midnight for the Jimmy Dore Show. That's right. They've added an additional show each week for you on WBAI in New York because the world's messed up.
Do not freak out.
That's the Jimmy Dore Show with me, Jimmy, Wednesdays and Thursdays at midnight on Free Speech, Peace, and Justice Radio, WBAI New York.
Freak out. Do not freak out.
Extinction Diaries. Tropical waters at the equator are known to be the richest and most stable diversity in the oceans. However, a research study released in spring of 2021 has concluded that the data indicates that stability and diversity has changed. There is an increasing exodus of marine life fleeing the equator. In fact, the equator is no longer the dominant bulk of diversity. Fossil records indicate that species flee for cooler waters. Many, if not most, species will disappear. Scientists warn that a similar warming as we are seeing today occurred some 250 million years ago, and over 90% of marine life died. Of course, this means dire consequences for humans that include harvesting food and tourism. Entire nations depending on fishing and tourism will find themselves without. There has never been a clear reason to protect and conserve marine areas, and to ensure as much life as possible enter into the migrations that can no longer be averted. 5 years ago, scientists warned ocean